Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of The Sports Sermon, the Georgetown Voice's new podcast on all things professional sports, college sports, anything you can think of related to sports. We're going to talk about it. I am podcast editor John Block, glad to be with you. And with me today, we have halftime sports editor Chris Dunn.
Hey guys, what's going on?
We have also halftime sports editor John Yaman.
Welcome to the show, baby.
All right. And we have excellent sports writer Jorge Denove.
How are you, everybody?
All right, so we've got a couple things slated for today. The first thing, this past weekend was week one of the NFL. And what better way to dive right into it than some QB talk? So we're going to go through some quarterbacks from the league, how they did, whether they surprised, disappointed, anything like that, any big stories related to quarterbacks. So let's start with Cam Newton. You may have heard of him, quarterback for the Carolina Panthers. Started the season off with a loss against the Broncos in a Super Bowl rematch last Thursday. Big story for Cam Newton was all the hits he took to the head. If anyone wants to kind of go through all the controversy surrounding those hits, Johnny, you want to go for it?
Sure. So basically, the main problem was throughout the entire game, the defensive line for the Panthers were not able to keep the Broncos away from their quarterback. And throughout the game, he took several hard hits. And near the end of the game, there was one especially brutal play where he had contact with someone coming in. And he threw the ball, and it was called, the head-to-head tackle was called, but at the same time, they had intentional grounding call in the same place, so it was negated. And that ended up being costly to the Panthers. And what should have been 15 yards for the Panthers was turned into, while it was, they still had to play afterwards, it was not as beneficial as it could have been. So the main problem afterwards was hearing about what can be done to help protect Cam Newton, who is a quarterback who is bigger than a lot of other players, but is not treated the same way as many other quarterbacks throughout the league.
I mean, just to touch on what Johnny said, again, Cam Newton is a quarterback that's very good with his feet, and throughout college and through his career in the NFL, he's made a name for running and scoring for touchdowns. I mean, part of the reason he was MVP last year was because he was a dual threat. He could throw, I think he threw 35 touchdowns at least, and he ran for at least 10, which is the first quarterback in the NFL ever to do that. And especially Greg Olsen said that we need to treat Cam like a quarterback. So all these helmet-to-helmet hits, all these more punishing hits, the late hits that you'd maybe see on like a running back trying to run. For Cam, as a quarterback, he should be protected, especially when they're targeting his head and he's trying to hold the ball and throw it, so he's not really able to shield his head with his arms.
Yeah, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is treating him like a quarterback, because you know, if you read the ESPN comments, which usually are not like the highest level of sports analysis you can find, but when you read them, you'll see people saying, well, if you're going to run like that and run like a running back, you're going to get hit. I mean, that wasn't even the case in any of the major hits. Like, every major hit we saw, it was Cam Newton sitting in the pocket and just getting absolutely demolished. And if that were Aaron Rodgers or that were Tom Brady, I mean, that would absolutely not be allowed. And I think this, like, I don't know, I was, like, very upset watching this game because, you see Cam Newton, like, writhing around on the ground afterwards. It was, like, off-putting. And I thought the refs completely lost control of the game pretty early. Not of the game, but they lost control of that aspect of the game pretty early on. And it was just, I mean, it was really, like, weird to watch the spearing that was going on there.
I mean, again, to talk of Chris, I mean, the biggest hit where we saw him writhing on the ground happened with a minute left in the game, mm-hmm. with the Panthers trying to drive down the field to hit a game-winning field goal. At that point, they were down 21-20. And it was the play where Cam got hit, threw the ball away because he saw the guy coming, wanted to shield himself, got called for intentional grounding, which offset the roughing the passer penalty. That was the only flag the refs threw. And even then, if it was just that one, it would have helped the Panthers go on and win the game. But, I mean, you still have to protect Cam, so that 15-yard penalty should be thrown every time.
And unfortunately for Cam Newton, this is the same thing that happened in the Super Bowl last year. He was hounded all game, and it came out, and he unfortunately was not able to come any better into this season. They had a whole summer to try and shore up the offensive line, but he still suffered, and because of that, the Panthers were in a worse position than they would have been otherwise.
Yeah, I think no one is coming out of this situation looking good. I think it was pretty obvious that Cam was taking some pretty hard hits to the head, and I think the refs obviously did a pretty poor job in controlling that. They definitely should have called a lot more penalties for that than they did. The Broncos players look bad because they were going after Cam Newton pretty aggressively and hitting him in the head with helmet hits are not okay for, you know, anyone to go after any player. I think they kind of were going after Cam Newton because he's Cam Newton. Like you guys are talking about treating him like a quarterback. I think that's definitely something that needs to happen. But even the Panthers don't really look good because they had Cam still in the game. Like, it was pretty clear that he was banged up. And they didn't really take, I think, the necessary steps to make sure that he was okay before having him continue to play.
It makes you wonder, I mean, how serious is the NFL with their mandatory concussion protocol? Because a pretty clear hit to the head where Cam's rolling on the ground, he should be taken off to the sideline and evaluated by an independent head trauma specialist or whatever the NFL says they have on the sidelines now. So where is that and where is that being enforced?
I mean, I agree with Jorge there, and I think, if anything, this game has made me think that, you know, the NFL, which now has, like, these guidelines, are going to be much stricter because I can't even imagine, you know, you have fourth quarter, really there's, like, a minute left on the clock. I understand, to an extent, why teams might not do the whole thing because that's just in the middle of the game, but there should be, like, you should have an injury timeout if it's a hit like that. There should be a booth somewhere where somebody can say, you know, we need to time out if there's a quarterback. And I understand that, you know, if it was a lineman, would you be doing the same thing? That kind of the problems. But, I mean, that was just everybody looks really bad. And the NFL made a point over the summer to, you know, talk about concussions and talk about hits. And, I mean, they did not back it up at all. In the first game, really, could not look any worse for the NFL from that standpoint.
And on the other side of the ball, there was Trevor Siemian, who beat out both Mark Sanchez and Paxton Lynch. And while he wasn't the most impressive, he did just enough where he had the same role almost as Peyton Manning last year. Nothing too impressive, but the defense was able to carry them, and he got his part of the job done. So nothing impressive, but good enough.
I mean, yeah, the Broncos defense is good enough where you can throw less than 180 yards and two interceptions and still win the game. So, I mean, he's in there just to be a game manager.
Yeah, I think you saw this last year, you know, Peyton Manning was far, far from his best. And Brock Osweiler was not anything special either. And yet they still won the Super Bowl. So I think it's definitely, the Broncos strategy is definitely a Rex Grossman-esque strategy as far as trying to win with defense. And honestly, I think they could have a lot of success doing that. It seems like Trevor Siemian is competent enough to at least give them a chance.
I think the same thing. I would argue that, Trevor Siemian, or actually, I would argue Brock Osweiler, I do remember, had a great drive against the Patriots last year to win that game. That was very hype. Watched that with Jorge. Really enjoyed that game. Great game. However, yeah, it really, I think this is going to be pretty much a stat line for the rest of the year because, I mean, he was playing against a very good Carolina defense, and I mean, for the rest of the year, he's going to play against some good defenses, but you're not really going to hear much about him. You're not really going to want to care about him, and Denver will still be a playoff team, you know, contending at the end for the Super Bowl. So I'm envious of Denver fans because of that, because I definitely think we'll talk about some other teams where they don't have the luxury of just putting in whoever a quarterback.
So we've got kind of the debut of Trevor Siemian. Let's move on to another QB debut. The Eagles' Carson Wentz led his team to a 29-10 victory over the Browns. 22 of 37, 278 yards, two touchdowns, no interceptions. I think the general consensus is a very solid first game from Carson Wentz. Any thoughts, hopes for the Philly fan and Chris Dunn?
I'm a homer. I'm ready to go. I am all in for Carson Wentz. Watched the game with some other Philly fans yesterday. Somebody was already talking about buying their Wentz jersey. I might go all in. That's a Christmas list right there, Mom, if you're listening. I'm ready to go. I'm not going to say he's better than McNabb, but Carson Wentz has never thrown up in a Super Bowl game is all I have to say about that. And so we'll see what he does.
I mean, I have these two Philly fans across the table from me, and I think they have to remember, they did play the Cleveland Browns. This is a Browns team that has not had a winning season since 2006, so his numbers are going to be a little inflated. Anyway, that being said, this is a new team with a new offense, And Carson Wentz looked comfortable in it. He read defense as well. He was able to make some pinpoint touchdown passes that, I mean, anyone covering would not have been able to stop him because they were timed so well and put right in his receiver's hands. He could have even had a few more yards, maybe 20. He could have hit 300 yards if his receivers didn't have four drops on the day. And, I mean, especially with a team that the offensive line can be shaky at times. The skill players are still learning the offense. Carson Wentz is still adjusting to the NFL speed of play. This could be his best stat line of the first half of the season, but second half of the season, he could be putting up some better numbers and just continuing to grow. So I think the Eagles' future, as much as I'm making fun of you two right now, looks pretty bright.
I mean, this is a kid with definitely a very bright future. You have to remember that he's just a small-town kid from North Dakota. There's a lot of pressure to come into a city like Philadelphia and perform the way that he did. So I think from a mental standpoint, it's very positive. It's a good confidence boost, knowing that he can perform and knowing that he has the city of Philadelphia behind him after such a solid start.
I am curious to see. First of all, I'm pretty surprised that the Browns had a winning season as recently as 2006.
They went 10-6 that year. I would know. I'm a Steelers fan. They're in my division.
But I would say I'm curious to see what the reaction from Philly fans is going to be when Carson Wentz almost inevitably struggles.
Mm.
I think he's a rookie quarterback, making the step up from the FCS on a not incredible, to say the least, Eagles team, although they do have a lot of talent. And so obviously the reaction has been great to his great first game. And honestly, I think the fans will stay behind him when things don't go as well. I think as harsh as us Philly fans can sometimes be, I do think that Carson Wentz, there's a lot of hopes placed on him, too much to kind of give up on him after some early bad performances that I think he probably will have.
Yeah, I definitely think you have to tone down my optimism from a little bit earlier to be a little bit more rational. John's right. He's going to struggle because, as Jorge brought up, the Eagles have some serious wide receiver problems in that their wide receivers can't catch the football, which is about as serious as a problem as wide receivers can get. So Nelson Agholor is going to have a couple of drops. Matthew's going to have a couple of drops. He's the running back, but the Eagles' offense is not going to work perfectly. And Carson Wentz was lucky he played the Browns because he was given an 8-day notice that he was going to start on a league he's never played in before under a coach who's never had been a head coach in this league. It could have gone so much worse. And, I mean, if they were playing anybody with a solid defense, it would have gone worse, I think. And so keeping that in mind, I hope that my fellow Philadelphia sports fans will not freak out too much at Carson when, that first interception happens, that first loss happens, because we better get ready for it. There's better teams than the Browns out there.
I mean, no matter the struggle, I think Philly fans are going to stay behind him just because when you put your whole future into someone like that, when you sell the farm and you say, we're all in for this kid, you better have the fans be ready for what can come. And while there will be struggles down the road, I think knowing that so much has been invested in this kid, that he definitely is going to have the full support of Philly behind him, at least for the first 1 or 2 years.
I mean, yeah, especially alluding to what Dunn said, don't freak out when Wentz throws his first pick or has his first loss, because I mean, part of what was so great about him playing the Browns was that the Eagles were able to effectively run the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Against better teams with better defensive front sevens, they're going to be able to stuff the run, and then they're just going to be able to sit on Carson Wentz having to throw the ball because they can't get any running game going. However, just to be a little hopeful for Philly, they are in the worst division in football. I mean, the division winner last year, Washington Redskins, finished at 9-7, I believe. So, I mean, if they can figure it out second half of the season, they could be a playoff team. Don't bank on it, but also don't necessarily count it out. And if they don't make the playoffs, I know Philly fans have no trouble in trusting the process, so they'll be fine.
True.
It is something we're used to. All right, so let's move on to not the first game for another quarterback, but the first meaningful game for one in Jimmy Garoppolo with the Patriots filling in for the suspended Tom Brady. People weren't sure how he was going to do, and he did pretty well. The Patriots came out on top in a tight game against the Cardinals, who are, I would say, one of the best teams in the league. And so things are looking bright for the four-game Jimmy Garoppolo era with the New England Patriots.
I mean, I'll be honest. I'm just pissed off that they have another incredibly good-looking...
I was going to say that.
Another incredibly good-looking quarterback. I mean, he comes from a quarterback school, apparently, because both Tony Romo and Sean Payton came from Eastern Illinois as well. Jimmy Garoppolo apparently has just been set up his whole life for this. He was born to take over the reins from Tom Brady, and here he is on Sunday Night Football making the most of it.
I was so ready to watch the Patriots lose in prime time. I prepared all weekend. Like, it was a good weekend for me, and I was like, it'll be great at the end when I have to, like, see Bill Belichick, like, pissed off on the sidelines after a loss. And instead, I saw, like, this, like, beautiful man in Jimmy Garoppolo walking off the sideline victorious, and it was just, like, it was awful. Like, I don't... The last thing anybody needs is that. And I go onto Twitter, and, like, Bill Simmons is all happy, and I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, every Boston homer in this country, they don't need another win, and yet... Like, Jimmy Garoppolo, who I didn't even know who he was until this summer. He comes out of nowhere. I was so mad.
Yeah, I mean, for anyone not from Boston, this was a disappointing result, to say the least. I mean, they have three cupcake games until Brady comes back. They have the Bills, the Texans, and the Dolphins all at home. This was the one game that you thought, all right, this is for sure a loss without Tom Brady. It was in Arizona, in prime time, without Rob Gronkowski, two offensive tackles, a guard, and Garoppolo just showed up and won the game, poised under pressure, throwing to Danny Amendola and Julian Edelman, who, like, would not be a wide receiver number one anywhere else, but because Belichick knows how to work with his personnel, they did it. And it's disappointing because he's been sitting behind Brady, kind of like Rodgers sat behind Favre, and it's possible that he could have a career similar in success. I'm not saying that he's as good as Aaron Rodgers, but we also haven't seen enough to be able to properly tell. So I just wanted to see them lose, and
even Bill Simmons, the sports star himself from Boston, said that he expected a 2-2 record going into after the fourth game of this season, but here they are taking down one of the best teams in the NFL, and it really is a sore point, I think, for the rest of the NFL and all of their fans. No one wanted to see this happen. Even Boston fans didn't really expect it, but here they are being blessed with another quarterback very capable of winning games.
All right, you're going to have to hear me out, though, because I had an epiphany today. I was eating my cheeseburger that I have every day for lunch, wondering what I was going to talk about on the podcast, and scrolling through Twitter, and it didn't occur to me. I saw that RG3 was hurt. And so here's what's going to happen. You heard it here first on the Sports Sermon from Dunn. 4 games from now, probably 5 weeks from now, Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be 4-0. The Patriots are going to trade Brady to the Browns because LeBron wants him to be there.
And they're going to play him first week. He's back.
They're going to play him right away. We're going to see Tom Brady in the Cleveland Browns jersey. And Tom Brady's going to suck because it's Cleveland, and balance will be somehow restored to the universe, right? Because there's going to be another handsome guy in playing quarterback in Boston, and I'm going to be happy because I get to see Tom Brady suck, and he's going to be on Cleveland, and I'm going to be happy because LeBron's going to be pissed off.
The curse is definitely real. We saw RG3 go down in his first game. The ringer anointed him as the time for resurrection of RG3, and Cleveland did its thing, and it took him out first game.
I really don't understand how anyone could have been hopeful for an RG3. Like, he went to the Browns.
Yeah.
No quarterback is going to be successful.
It just doesn't work.
I mean, he had a sub 50% completion percentage before he hurt his arm and went on the IR. He didn't throw a touchdown. He threw an interception. He seemed to airmail every receiver. It's a guy that hasn't played meaningful football for the past 2 seasons and hasn't really had any sort of momentum going for him since he hurt his knee, because that's part of what made him so dynamic, his ability to run. And it's a shame because he was exciting to watch, but he's just not going to be that guy anymore.
Yeah, I think it is, as funny it is to joke about the Browns and RG3, it is sort of disappointing for him, obviously, that kind of his career has been hurt so much. Now it's going to be 3 seasons with really him not able to play for various reasons.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, he was so fun to watch at Baylor, and he was so good when he was at Baylor, and he was just, mean, it was so exciting. And his rookie year also was very good with Washington. And so you just – I don't know what it is with the guy. I mean, he's not like a small guy. He looks like he can be taking these hits. And it's just, you know, I really hope – I think this is going to be out for like 8 weeks. They're going to check him up in 4 weeks and we'll see. But I really just hope for him and also for every NFL viewer, if he was ever playing at the level he played in college in the NFL, I mean, that'd be so much fun to watch. Just a mobile quarterback like that, super
those
fast.
Bombs, man.
Throwing bombs. He's a rocket. Absolute cannon for an arm.
Well, but, not anymore.
Well, okay.
No, what was his left shoulder? He overthrew everybody.
It was his left shoulder that he hurt. He's right-handed, right. So it's fine.
All right, so let's transition to another quarterback who's exciting to watch, but who's healthy and whose prospects this season are looking pretty good, and that is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Jameis Winston. 281 yards, 4 touchdowns in the Buccaneers' win. Thoughts on Jameis Winston and his prospects for this season?
I thought he really looked fantastic. There was one throw he threw to Mike Evans where he was only leading his defender by one step maybe, but he landed it right in the breadbasket, right in front of Mike Evans. And it really was a terrific throw, and it's really cool to see after a little bit of a struggle last year, but he really came out strong. And it's good to see these quarterbacks progress because we have a new era coming in. And I think it's very exciting that everything is kind of coming together for Tampa Bay because last year the receivers and the quarterbacks should have been better, but they weren't as good as I would have hoped. And now it's all starting to form together. So hopefully their offense is going to take off. They beat the Falcons, who are generally a very good team. And it was exciting that they were able to pull that off.
I do think I'm not totally ready to go on Jameis Winston yet. He's got a really tough schedule coming up. He's got Arizona is his next game, and then they play the Broncos and the Panthers back-to-back with the Rams in between there. That is not easy, and those are some really good defenses. So you'll have to come back to me on – they play the Panthers Monday night, October 10th. I'll tell you October 11th what I think about Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I mean, don't expect him to put up those type of numbers the next few weeks. But beyond that, I mean, the only other elite defenses they really play are the Chiefs and the Panthers again and the Seahawks. Not in that order, but, I mean, those are the only other three, like, really tough games where he has a very good defense up against him. So, I mean, he could continue to put up numbers like this. He'll continue to grow. I don't think that Tampa Bay is good enough to make a playoff run. I still think that the NFC South is not that great and that the wild cards are going to be one for the NFC West for either Seattle or Arizona, and the other one will be either Green Bay or Minnesota. And they're not good enough to pip the Panthers for first place in the NFC South yet, but I mean, again, another bright future. So keep an eye on him and how he does this season.
I mean, if anything, they still have the Buccaneers still have 2 games to play against the Saints, and the Saints always have an absolutely trash pass defense. So his numbers are going to be through the roof for at least those 2 games, and those will be fun to watch because Drew Brees is still a fantastic quarterback from what we saw. 4 touchdowns, terrific play all around. I thought that game in general was fantastic. And it'll be interesting to see the new era of quarterback battles, especially between new Jameis Winston and 37-year-old Drew Brees.
I think Winston was not perfect against the Falcons. He had a few bad throws. His interception was not a very good throw. But overall, he looked very solid. He had some excellent passes. And whether or not the Buccaneers are super successful this season, I think with Winston as their QB, they have a chance to become a very good team in the next few years. So, for time reasons, we're not going to go through every single QB who played this past weekend. And we're going to transition to another topic in a different kind of football. Many people know it as soccer. And that is Landon Donovan's recent unretirement and return to the LA Galaxy. So, last week, Landon Donovan announced that he would be returning to the Galaxy. Number 26, whereas his usual number was 10. He was a substitute in LA's most recent game against Orlando. LA won 4-2. Donovan came on late in the game. The game was pretty much decided at that point. Received a very raucous ovation from the crowd in LA. But I think what a lot of us here are wondering is whether or not it was a good move for Donovan to return to the Galaxy and why he might have done it.
Look, for Donovan, it's not that bad. I think he loves the game. He wants to be around the game. He loves the L.A. organization that he's given so much to and is their most iconic player. I mean, you can say what you want about a David Beckham that they brought in and skyrocketed the MLS, but when I think of the L.A. Galaxy, I still think of Landon Donovan. He's the one that wore the armband. He's the one that was integral in their success, and he's the American, the best American player ever on the best American team ever. So I think it's great for him to come back to the Galaxy. For the Galaxy in their current moment, however, I don't see how a 34-year-old Landon Donovan, who's been gone from the game for 2 years, is going to contribute anything meaningful to their title successes. I just don't see it.
First of all, I'd like to say that Brian McBride is far and away the greatest American player we've ever seen.
Yeah, yeah, we can argue about that later.
And, I mean, for him, I think he said in an interview that one of the main reasons he wanted to come back was so that he could spend time on the field after a game with his son, Talon. And while that kind of seems like a kind of flimsy answer without much substance, I kind of believe that. He's always shown before that he's really into spending time with his family, and I think that was important for him. I think more so he saw an opportunity once he saw Nigel De Jong leave and a few other midfielders got hurt, and he said, you know what, I might as well come back for the season just because I'm still physically able to and I can't have this opportunity to spend time with my kids on the field, which is a moment that he wanted to have, which I think is cool. And he said, you know what, fuck it, like, I'm in.
See, I don't know if I really buy that. It's so weird to me that his number one thing is, like, I want to spend more time with my family, which is what every player says when he retires. But Landon Donovan's unretiring. Like, that is really odd. And to me, it's like, did he not get the closure he wanted by not making the last World Cup roster? Like, did he not... Is it weird to him that he's, like, still on these commercials during Copa America for, like, tournaments he's not playing in? And, like, is this, like, a closure thing? Because, like, I don't... Like, we're, like, in the middle of the season. This isn't, like, Landon Donovan... This isn't, like, Michael Jordan coming back or something like that. Like, this is Landon Donovan coming back in the middle of the season, and I don't... On a team that we're saying here might not even need him, like, I don't know what his end game is. Like, is he going to score a couple of goals, and what's he going to do when the season's over? Is he going to re-sign, or is he going to be like, his last time playing soccer was like a weird couple month stretch wearing another number? Like, it's really bizarre to me, this whole thing. I was shocked when I read about it.
I mean, if I'm Jossie Zardes for the Galaxy, I'm happy, because this is, I mean, Jossie Zardes is a rising star. This is an American legend who can possibly mentor him, and if I'm the MLS as a league itself, I'm happy because, again, you have another big name joining your league that's just going to create better TV markets and help the league to grow. Maybe that's part of why the Galaxy did it, because they want to continue to grow the sport in LA, maybe just make a splash. Landon Donovan's coming back when the new club LAFC is set to enter in 2018. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe they just so this is still our city. I don't know. I don't think it helps their chance of winning.
I mean, Don, I'd like to say that he addresses your skepticism head on.
He says, I don't have whatever article Johnny is reading right now.
His quote is, I know this won't be received well by everyone. That's okay. I've always made decisions in life based on two guiding principles, my own happiness and the happiness of those I love and care about. I don't know if you might not think that that's the most direct answer, and I'm not saying that that's definitely the only reason that he's out here just because it makes his family happy. I don't really buy that, but I think from his perspective, he's just coming in here and he says, all right, well, I might as well. It makes me happy to play. I want to prove I still can. I was taken off the team a few years ago when I felt I should have been on. I still have something, a little bit something to prove.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I don't want him to be happy. Like, I hope Landon Donovan enjoys the rest of his life, because, like, why would I not want that? I'm just saying it is kind of weird. But I also agree with Jorge that if I'm the MLS or any other team that is set to play LA at home, I am so happy, because Landon Donovan sells tickets. And, you know, out West Coast, it may not be the case, but, you know, in other places, a lot of teams are struggling to sell tickets. They're struggling to fill their stadiums. And maybe not Orlando City either, Johnny. I know you're very proud of that. But, yeah, people are struggling to do that. And Landon Donovan will do that very well.
So you're saying there might be a conspiracy within the league?
No, I'm just saying the league is happy because of this. I'm not saying there's no conspiracies.
I am curious to know kind of how this came about. Because I know Donovan had talked about sort of, he was talking with some people he still keeps in touch with the Galaxy, about, you know, sort of the injuries. And I think he said, like, someone joked that, you should come back, Landon, and he ended up coming back. I don't know if that's really how it played out. I'm kind of curious to see kind of who was sort of the instigator in that situation. I don't know if, like, Landon could just go to the Galaxy and be like, I want to come back, and they'd be like, okay, you're Landon Donovan, or if the Galaxy were like, hey, we need you to, like, be a leader in our team for the end of the season. So I'm curious to see, to know, even though we probably won't find out exactly how that situation worked itself out.
I mean, Chris, you brought up an interesting point. I didn't even think of ticket sales for other teams. That's one thing that, I mean, is definitely a positive for Donovan. Yes, he can be a leader, although there are plenty of veterans who have been around the game for a long time who can continue to lead. I mean, the one last thing I have to say is Giovanni Dos Santos, please give up your number. It is weird to see Landon Donovan running out there in 26. He is number 10 in LA Galaxy fans' hearts. Just help us out, please. You're going to sell more jerseys and the Galaxy can probably pay you more on your contract in the end anyway.
I mean, I think it is pretty cool that Landon Donovan is back, just for the fact that we see a lot of international stars coming to the MLS now, but we don't really have a lot of American heroes to celebrate in the Major League Soccer. So I think it's kind of cool that we have like this old school player who guided us through a lot of tournaments in the early part of this century, and to have him back one last time as one final hurrah, that part is actually kind of cool with me.
See, I know it's cool, and I think it's going to be good for the MLS in the short run, but I definitely think it does not help their like outlook as a retirement league. Like, one of the main criticisms is like these guys just come over when they're done playing from Europe and they like screw around in the MLS. And now it's like Landon Donovan's done screwing around in the MLS and he's going to come back to the... Like, that's just weird. That's, like, very odd.
I think we kind of have gone from the MLS as a retirement league to the MLS as an unretirement
league.
Unretirement league,
yeah.
Which is somehow even worse.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to touch on Chris's point, there are still more Pirlos and Drogbas and Gerrards coming to the league than there are Giovincos and Dos Santoses, who are great players in their prime. So yeah, Donovan doesn't help that. I still think if you're MLS overall, you're happy about it.
Yeah.
Are the Galaxy, obviously, you know, maybe from a financial standpoint, they're probably going to be happy about it, but as far as their on-field performance, how do you think Donovan coming in is going to affect them, if at all?
It doesn't make a difference. I mean, he's not going to start. The Galaxy have too much attacking talent that has been around the game. It is definitely fitter than him. Playoff wise, maybe you bring him on because he has the nerve to take penalties, but besides that, there's no real point having him on your team.
Yeah, I mean, he played 7 minutes the other day after his team was already up. He said afterwards, I came into a game where both teams were exhausted and I was the slowest player on the field. That was him saying that. Obviously he'll get back in better shape, but I mean, he's not, I can't imagine that LA, their weaknesses are not an attack, and they don't really need a goal scorer right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe morale-wise, maybe in the locker room, he provides something as they push for the playoffs and as they're in the playoffs. But like you said, Jorge, they have so many veterans on that team already. They have Ashley Cole, Van Damme, Gerrard, Keane. It's just, I don't know that as much as he has the experience that it really will offer anything to what they already have.
Will he be in FIFA? Do we know? Is he going to be in the newest FIFA?
That maybe he's just doing it to be in FIFA.
That would be unreal if somehow they got him up there
already. He already has a legend card, though. I like, what happens? He's got a legend card if he's with the Galaxy. Like,
yeah, you get, like,
he has his LA Galaxy like current Ultimate Team card and his like
26
legend
you
card.
Find like 26 Landon in a bronze pack, like, and you find legend Landon, like, Donovan.
How many Ultimate teams are going to have two Landon Donovans up front?
That would be incredible if, rather than an MLS conspiracy, it were an EA conspiracy.
All these of EA
back into FIFA. We can only hope. Conspiracy theories are my dreams every night. That's all I want.
That's bizarre.
That's a strange dream, man.
All right. On that note, I think it's time to wrap up. Thank you so much for listening. You can find More podcasts from the Georgetown Voice on www.georgetownvoice.com. And you can listen to our podcast on iTunes. Search the Voice Podcast Network to find us. We have lots of good stuff related on sports, leisure, movies, food, all kinds of stuff. So you can also follow us on Twitter at GTown Voice and at Halftime GU. You can follow us individually on Twitter. Everyone wants to go around and plug their handle.
At GetHerDone with some underscores in there.
I'm at RealJayamon.
I don't have a Twitter, but Mr. GetHerDone, how many underscores do we need?
GT underscore IR underscore DUNN.
There we go. They need that.
Instagram nice. And Twitter. I got it all.
That is. Those are the important details that we need.
Mm-hmm.
I am at John underscore block underscore. That's John J-O-N. Thanks so much for listening again. Enjoy the rest of your day. Goodbye.